Welcome to the WebSphere Support Technical Exchange. Today's topic is Do-It-Yourself WebSphere Commerce Problem Determination. Today's presenters are Mike Callahan and David Lagumba. Mike and David are software developers from the WebSphere Commerce Support Organization. As a member of the WebSphere Commerce Support Team, they are responsible for providing technical assistance for the WebSphere Commerce family of products. At this time, I would like to turn the presentation over to Mike and David.
Great. Thanks a lot, Joseph. Thanks, everybody, for joining us today. So let's move to slide two and take a look at the agenda. So today is actually the first of a series of two talks that Dave and I are giving. There's going to be another one next Thursday on some of the tooling and resources. So today is about do-it-yourself problem determination. We're trying to drive home some of the techniques on how to troubleshoot runtime problems for your commerce server. So we're going to get started by taking a look at some of the typical problems you could face on your site, but the main focus throughout or the common theme is going to be tracking the actual flow of a web request for commerce through each tier in the stack. And we're going to try to drive home how to know what you're looking for at each level. The important techniques we want to drive home is going to be what questions to ask at each tier and how to debug at that level. After myself, Dave will take over and take a look at some actual examples of this, and then he's going to show us some brief things on how to debug performance problems. Then we'll wrap it up on where to go for some more help. Slide three, please. All right, so problems, what problems? So no matter where you are in your commerce project, there's a possibility you're going to run into some problems on your site. It could be anywhere from the design or planning stage at the beginning to your production launch or anything beyond that. So one of the first techniques that you want to be learning is how to actually isolate down the problem that you're facing. You need to know which tier or component you're having the problem at, and once you're looking at that, how to actually make sense of the info that you have available to you there. So for the sake of this presentation, we're actually going to be focusing on the runtime side of things. So I have both non-runtime and runtime problems listed here. The runtime ones, though, we're going to look more at something like the typical shopping cart flow, so browsing the catalog, adding to your cart, and checking out. So anything on the runtime or actual storefront side of things. One thing we do want to remind you of, though, is it's actually not going to be a technical deep dive into specific commerce components, such as the orders component. We're more trying to drive home the troubleshooting techniques and how to make sense of the info and knowing when to look at each part of information. We're going to take you through our thought process, hoping that can benefit you. So it's kind of the first place to go, or the initial thoughts that you want to have when troubleshooting your problems. Also keep in mind with a lot of sites are approaching their peak in the fall or winter season. So if you keep this in mind throughout that time, we're hoping it can expedite your problem resolution time. So one, if you know immediately how to pin down where you're actually having the problem, and if you can actually gather the right data and the right traces right off the bat, then either if you can solve it yourself or once you invoke support, it'll be a lot quicker for us to pick up where you left off. Slide four, please. Okay, so what's actually in it for you who may be debugging these problems? So we're hoping that if you can understand our thought process that we on the support team typically go through, as I said, it's going to save you some time in solving your own problems, but also let you recognize different types of problems quicker and know where to look for each type of information. If it's the case of a commerce code defect, though, ultimately you probably have to invoke IBM or support, but for most other types of runtime problems, the thought patterns that we go through, you can probably do the same on your side. You just need to know where to start. And even if you can't solve the problem on your own, if you've already gathered the right traces and even maybe minimized the amount of data that we have to look at to the specific relevant part, even if it is a code defect or just some other problem, as I said, it's going to be a lot quicker for us to pick up where you left off and avoid wasting any time. Again, one of the other better reasons to understand the actual techniques in solving a problem is to sort of grasp the types of things that create the problems in the first place. If you have a common set of problems or around a specific component on your site, over time, the better you understand how to debug it, well, you're probably going to better understand where these problems first crept up from, and you can go back and actually avoid the problems in the first place, whether it be changing your code so you're not having some crazy loop that loads the entire catalog, or something like that. Or it might remind you to do regular database maintenance and so on. Let's move on to slide five, please. Okay, so here's the actual meat of what I've been referencing. So this is where does the actual web request go? So the diagram is pretty high level. You probably understand the different components here. But this is kind of going to be the focus throughout the presentation on how do we track the request and how do we know what we're looking for. So typically the request will start at a client side. In our case here, we're just going to use a web browser as the client. The request would get sent off to either a load balancer or a single web server. And then the web server will use the WASP plugin to route the request to the actual Commerce application server, which is hosting the Commerce app itself. And then the Commerce application may or may not need to invoke an SQL against the database, either through an EJB or something else directly. One thing to keep in mind, so as we're looking at the different flow here, I've got a few things listed, just a few of the many things listed that could be of relevance that you need to consider when debugging each of these components in the stack. So for example, on the browser side, well, that's where the client JavaScript is going to be running. If you're making Web2O requests or anything relating to the cookie or session, often you're going to find yourself actually debugging inside the browser itself. The web server and the plugin, that's going to be responsible for routing everything to the actual application. So you need to become familiar with the plugin config XML and how the actual mapping works to the different virtual hosts and WAS and how it's actually finding a commerce module to send the request to. On the subsequent slides, we're going to go through each of these in a little more detail. So let's go on to slide 6. Okay, so let's on slide 6 here. So let's say now you have the case where you do have some kind of problem. Where is this problem? So the problem could be anything. It could be either you're testing locally, and let's say you find a problem adding to your cart. A lot of people actually monitor their system out logs on production, and if you're seeing some unknown exceptions, well, where does that come from? Or let's say your site actually crashes. Let's say you get an out of memory. Well, where do we go from there? First off, you need to know which tier to start looking at. The approach is always different for this, to each his own. Depending on the symptom, you could go different ways about it. Commonly, you could actually have your DBA come to you and say, for example, you're seeing a lot of deadlocks or timeouts, here's some problematic queries. In that case, remember though, you're probably going to want to go back to the actual application, one, to look at the application logs, what kind of deadlocks and timeouts are we seeing there, and which code is this coming from? Because then once we know the bean involved, we can think of the bigger picture again of, well, where is this bean come from? What page is it coming from? And are we invoking it too much? So you always want to consider the application, and us being the commerce support team, well, we're probably going to always start to debug with the application level itself. So we'll usually start with your system out log, and then from there we'll work outwards. We'll either gather traces or start to look at the database side or the web server side. Let's move on to slide 7, please. Okay, so we're going to look at each individual tier in the stack that I showed on the diagram earlier. Here we're going to start with some of the questions or sort of the thought process that you want to go through when you're debugging a web browser type issue. So I realize this one's pretty high level. For complex problems, you're probably going to want to get into more specific things, but knowing what happens on the web browser can actually give you a lot of useful information. So we see a lot of different behaviors specific to browsers, actually specific to the type of browser that you're using. So it could either be some of the limitations of Internet Explorer, such as a 20-cookie limit that IE imposes. So if you have a lot of custom cookies, that could be a problem. Long URL problems. So everything could seem to render correctly on the server side, no exceptions whatsoever. But if the response URL is over 2,000 characters in some versions of IE, then it's actually going to truncate that in the browser, and you're just going to see a blank page rendered in the browser. And that's one of the tougher things to debug, but if you don't see an exception in the log and you see a blank page, consider trying the problem in Firefox as well. You can also check the cookies that you have in the browser. I'm going to show a couple examples after, but one example you might want to consider for that is something like if I'm getting an access control error. So a lot of the times if you run into an access control problem, well, odds are your access control policy is defined correctly. So if it seems like it's kind of a weird case, things you want to do are check your cookies to see, okay, I can't add to my cart, why not? Well, if I'm actually looking at the cookie I have compared to who owns the order ID in my URL, am I the owner of this order ID? Or is this catalog entry the correct catalog entry? So you want to sometimes be correlating the cookies you have to the access control problems, and a lot of the debugging can be done on client side with some of the tools we'll show after. Slide 8, please. So just to drive home a couple extra points on the previous slide, I mentioned how to look at the cookies or when to. A simple JavaScript alert call, you just type that exactly in the URL of your browser, either Internet Explorer or Firefox, and it'll show you all the cookies for that particular domain for the given browser session. So that can show you the Commerce cookies and some of the WAS cookies as well, and any custom ones. Firebug is what I'm showing on the bottom half, along with Tamper Data. A couple of the useful debugging tools that Firebug will offer you as downloads. So with Firebug, it's actually going to let you track any outgoing request from your browser. So that could be a simple clicking of a link in Consumer Direct. Could be the actual static images that are getting served from the web server. It'll show each one separately. Or if you've got a Web2O or Madison's type store, you'll see each individual AJAX request, and you can actually track how long each individual request is taking and what the return size is for each one. So if certain pages are loading slowly, 99% of the time, I'm going to want to know if we can reproduce it in Firefox so we can actually look at this type of data. It's also going to show you the HTTP headers, so it'll show you the parameters and all the cookies that are outgoing. And for the sake of AJAX requests, it's useful if you click on the response tab, because then you can actually see the JSON object that's coming back, or the rendered little JSP snippet for a refresh area. So it's useful to use a tool like Firebug to make sure that the response is actually what you're expecting on your reload. Slide 9, please. Okay, so questions about the web server now. So we looked at the browser, let's move to the next component, which is the web server. So typically, web server problems, they're more config problems that we see once the site is up and running. So you want to make sure that the config is correct off the bat. So that's why I have the HTTP conf reference. You probably are familiar with what's in there and what you need to check. But in terms of configuration, well, when you're reproducing a problem or when you have a problem, consider the other things that are actually in between your requests coming from the browser and hitting the web server. So do you have a load balancer in front of multiple web servers? Or do you have something like SSL Accelerator? So you want to consider anything that's going to mangle the request and make it an unclean request, because if we can't see the problem at the web server itself, well, maybe the problem is actually before that. One of the other useful things is you sometimes would want to bypass the web server altogether. So again, if you have a performance problem, let's say, and certain pages are loading slowly, well, one of the techniques you can do, there's a few different ones, but one you can do is actually create a virtual host on WAS for the HTTP transport directly, and then when you hit that port, you're going straight to the application server and taking the web server out of the picture. So that could sometimes help you pin down whether or not the web server is actually part of the problem, because a lot of the times it actually does contribute to slower performance. Slide 10, please. All right, moving along to the WAS plugin now. So it's tied pretty closely to the web server, obviously where it lies, and also just in debugging it, we'd often look at them in sync. For the plugin, a lot of the questions you want to ask are actually related to what you see in a plugin trace. So just looking at a plugin log itself can give you something useful, such as is the app server getting marked down and one of your nodes is being removed from the cluster temporarily. But if you can actually enable a plugin trace, it's going to tell you a lot more. So be warned, though, you probably don't want to just enable it on a production server. It's fairly verbose. It will probably slow things down for you. So just do it in an isolated or some kind of local environment if you can. There may be the odd time that we do need you to turn on to reproduce a production problem if that's the only place we can see it. When you do have the plugin trace, just a couple quick points on what it's actually going to tell you and the questions you want to ask. Is it picking up the correct virtual host of Commerce? So you'd see something like the VH demo host, which I have listed there. So is it picking up my right host name on the right port? And if so, is it finding the correct module of Commerce that we're trying to map to? So for the type of request we're talking about today, the stores module, you'd actually see it get sent to the transport port, the entire request, and the response that comes back from that particular app server to say whether, you know, it's a 404 coming from the app server, or we don't even see the request get to the app server, and the routing is wrong, and we get a 404 from the web server. So these are some of the things you want to keep in mind. Slide 11, please. Okay, so I've got on this slide how to debug the web server and app and the plugin together. As I said, they're tied closely together. So let's just take a look at a couple things from each, specifically starting with the access log from the web server. So you're probably pretty familiar with it, but it is actually quite useful in the sense that it's going to log every incoming request that hits the web server, so you don't even need to turn on tracing like you would for the app server to see that. So it'll give you things like the request URI, top categories display, all the parameters, and also the return code, 200 in this case, saying the request was returned okay. But one of the other useful parts of that is check the IP address, which is the first part of that string there in the middle. So the IP address can actually come into play a lot, and again, with the peak season coming up, we talk about performance problems often. So I've seen it relating to performance problems or some kind of intermittent problem. If your site's getting spammed by a lot of requests all of a sudden, you want to check to see if they're coming from a common IP, maybe. Or if you see an intermittent problem in your application logs or just exceptions, and you don't really know where they come from, well, see if you can correlate it back to the access log and actually find the IP where it comes from. Because I've seen things like where it's a security scan running once a morning on a production site, and it actually just pounds the server with requests, and either brings the whole CPU to a spike or causes out of memory or something like that. I've also seen where if it's an external IP and it seems like it's getting hit a lot, or it seems to correlate to a lot of exceptions in the log, it could be something like a search engine such as Google actually hitting your site and trying to crawl and index your site. So I've seen problems where Google, for example, could be missing some parameters, some of the dynamic parameters, and then if your catalog ID is missing, then you're going to see exceptions in your log relating to that. And the plugin trace specifically, I sort of touched on most of this on the previous slide. One other thing is keep in mind that the session affinity is only at the application server level. If you have multiple web servers, it could be sprayed to any of the web servers. So if you're trying to track a request, you need to keep that in mind. Slide 12, please. Okay, so I've got two slides here on the database. But we're going to go out of order a bit and talk about the database first, but debugging the database is kind of a whole issue upon itself. I can barely even scratch the surface here, so I'm not really going to try to do that. I'm going to reference you to some of the things we have at the end of this. So we have other webcasts or other good documentation on how to troubleshoot at the database level, so I think you should refer to those after. But in terms of actually tracking the requests for the commerce server, which is what we're focusing on, some of the things you want to consider is if you are seeing a lot of SQLs or particular SQLs that are long running, well, we want to know which requests those are coming from. So you want to consider that and always go back to the application level, and you're probably going to work closely with your DBA to make sure that the proper maintenance is being done on your database and identify the problematic queries, but also work with your developers. So if you know specific queries, well, are these out-of-the-box queries or are they custom queries? And even if they're out-of-the-box, well, how does your code call our code to invoke these queries? A couple things that creep up often with database issues is actually the data itself. So things like, if you have a large order that has a million items in the cart, how it gets so big, I'm not sure, but if something actually hits that order or you display that cart, it's probably going to cause you out of memory, guaranteed. Could be the junk order as well. If somehow something is referencing the order item of the generic user, well, that's the only order is the junk order, that could cause you problems as well. So that, along with things like pulling back a large portion of the catalog, so some kind of sitemap or a category page that actually lists all the products and items and their attributes and descriptions on a single page, it's probably going to be pulling back too much data at once for you. So you could either restructure the data to make smaller categories or actually go back to your development team and consider restructuring the code to not be pulling back all this data in the first place. And this also brings up the topic of make sure you do your database maintenance. So dbclean will help you a lot with that. And some of these problematic tables, just make sure you're cleaning them up, clean up the scheduler tables over time, the orders tables, and so on. Slide 13, please. So 13, I'm not going to get into any details on. I just want to leave this as reference with you. Again, I'm going to refer you to some of the links we have at the end. These are some of the questions you want to be asking or things to look at for DB2. It's kind of taking it a little a little more detail than the page I was talking about earlier, but I want to focus mostly on how to track the requests, so I'm just going to leave this as an aside for now. So let's skip ahead to slide 14. Now we're going to talk about the actual Commerce application. So the Commerce app is lying on the WAS server, of course. These questions are kind of geared towards both of those as one object. The questions you see here, a lot of them are probably pretty common to you. If you've ever worked with Dave or myself on a PMR, we probably ask you some subset of these right off the bat. They're not just placeholder questions, they really do matter to us. But it's not just specific to the Commerce application, but kind of on any Commerce problem at all. These are the things we want to know. So the most important thing, obviously, is, well, what is your problem? What's the current behavior you're seeing compared to what you're expecting to see? Or just what are you trying to do? What are you trying to accomplish? Has this ever worked? So sometimes it's a tough question, or you're not really sure if it's worked because you don't know until it fails that it wasn't working. But when we ask this, we just want to make you think of other things that are involved, such as code deployments or data propagation or data loads. Let's say you loaded 1,000 promotions last night and you woke up this morning and the guy next to you says it takes 10 minutes to add to cart. Well, that's why we ask, has anything changed? Because we want you to know that the data has been loaded and that probably contributes to the problem. We want to know if it's a reproducible problem. So is this something that you're just hitting on your production server, or does this happen on your staging or development as well? We want to know that, and we want to know if it's an intermittent problem, mostly because we want to know if it's something you can gather trace for. But as we're going to show you, trace is really kind of the bulk of where we do our PDing, spending time looking through the trace. So if we can really understand if it's a reproducible case, or try to isolate the scenario itself, like is it something, it's a cached request or non-cached, or does it only happen for a logged-in user, or one specific user, or I can't view only one product page, or I can't view any product page. So as much detail as you can provide us off the bat is really going to pin down the types of things we're going to look for. We also ask you all the time, guaranteed, for the Commerce Fixback level you're on. We need to know this because we need to know what exact level of code we're going to be correlating your scenario to in our environments and in the actual code when we're looking at the Java itself. The behavior of the code has probably changed over time, so we need to know. We also need to know if you're using custom code. Now, we're going to ask this all the time, but we're not necessarily pinning down and saying that, oh, if you have custom code, well, that's the problem. A lot of times it's not, but we need to know at least why is your behavior different from the out-of-the-box behavior. Is it just a configuration thing, or do you actually have some custom code that's kind of interjecting and changing up the flow a little? And we just want to know that so we can better understand what happens and what's invoking our out-of-the-box code. Sometimes, though, it is, of course, custom code as well. One last question at the bottom. Dave's going to go over this in more detail after, but what else is in the picture? So this probably isn't a question I'm going to ask you right off the bat, but as the problem progresses and I learn more about it, and if it seems like something else is kind of creating the strange behavior, well, I might ask us to take a step back and say, okay, well, what else is in this environment? Is there some kind of messaging going on? Or if you're seeing spikes in memory, well, are you using something other than Commerce for a search engine, a third-party search? Are you using something other than Dynacache, or not just Dynacache for your caching? Scheduled jobs, if it's kind of a intermittent problem or it just spikes at a given time in the CPU or something against the database, consider your scheduled jobs. Consider what kind of data feeds or messaging feeds or data loads you have going on, and these could contribute to the problem. Slide 15, please. Okay, so let's focus on the actual Commerce application now. So I showed earlier at high level where the request goes across the different components in the stack. Now let's zoom in on the Commerce component. So what we've got here, probably familiar with these, it's still pretty high level. The first part are the servlet filters. The runtime servlet filter of Commerce will be the first thing that intercepts the web request once it gets to the application server. So this is going to deal with anything related to the cookies, so it'll determine which cookies you have, which user ID you are, or if we need to be generating a new user ID for you. Anything to do with the session as well in the business context type of information. So if you're having problems around that, then this is where you're going to want to be looking in the trace, and I'll show you this in a second. After the servlet filter is a cache filter. So that's going to determine, based on your cache spec XML configuration, should we be serving your request from Dynacache, or do we in fact really need to go to the servlet to actually render your request? By the servlet, I mean the three or four things in the middle of this picture. So we've got the struts framework, the controller commands, the JSPs or views, and the beans on the end there. When we talk about actually routing the request and what happens with the request and how to track it, struts actually plays a big role in that. So the struts config is for a lot more than just mapping the actual URI from your browser request to a controller command or to an actual URL inside of Commerce through forwards and actions. It's going to create other properties for you too, such as, should a guest user be generated from a generic on this type of request, or do you in fact have to be authenticated or logged in to even invoke this command? Should we redirect you to the logon page? Or can we invoke this by HTTP, or should we be making this a secure connection and put it over HTTPS? So the struts config is something you often need to relate back to, especially when you're following through a trace log and you want to know more about the command being invoked. At the end there, depending on the component, it's really going to get component specific from that point on. As I said, we're trying to focus on tracking the requests themselves, but do always remember which component you're dealing with when you're actually trying to even track the request. So for example, if it is an order type problem, I can't add to my cart, or an access control problem, well, the component itself is giving me an order ID, order item IDs, a user ID, and so forth. I can actually use those keys, which are usually end up being very tightly related to the end problem, I can actually use those keys in the trace log to be tracking through the request. I'll show you how we track through the requests on the subsequent slides after this. Let's go on to slide 16, please. Okay, so slide 16 is pretty much reiterating what I hashed out on the previous page. Just a couple more things to keep in mind there. Not really too much more to go over on this, so let's just skip ahead to slide 17. Okay, so let's take a little step aside here and bring up the actual notion of enabling traces. So you might ask yourself, and I do get asked this, why are we asking you for trace, and do we really need this trace, or are we just buying time? To make a long story short, we really need the trace. So it's the easiest way for us to be solving the problem. A lot of the times, we could eventually reproduce a problem that seems similar in our own local environment, but I prefer to ask for a trace for a number of reasons. So for one, odds are you probably already have the environment set up where this problem can readily happen. I don't. If we already have something where we know it's exactly your scenario, the inputs are your inputs, not what I'm thinking they are, the back-end data is the same, you have the same the right number of orders, the catalog size, all these things you need to take into consideration. That's why we want to see your traces. And as soon as we see the traces, we exactly know which code is being invoked, and I'll show you how to actually read through these traces to find the relevant requests. So once we do have a trace from you, there's a couple things we can do with that, other than just reading through a single trace itself. We can compare the trace of your non-working case to potentially a working case. Let's say you add one item to your cart and it fails, but if you add another one to your cart, it works. Well, let's get the traces of both, compare them, and probably pretty quickly we can pin down specifically which part of code is causing the problem, and then from there we can probably get the data that corresponds to these things that were added to the cart and see what's different. The other thing that we can do is compare your non-working case to our local case. So in that case, I will have a trace of my own, because I know that's kind of the simple out-of-the-box case. And again, not to pin it down on your custom code, but I want to know, where does the behavior deviate from your scenario to my out-of-the-box scenario? And that will help us either see, okay, maybe it's something data-related, or maybe it is actually custom code that's involved that changes the behavior. As far as actually getting the traces, we reference at the end of this the main must gather for Commerce. So that will reference all the other Commerce must gathers and which components of trace would be needed to debug that kind of problem. The Info Center itself also lists all of the components of trace. Pretty self-explanatory. that is pretty useful. And if you can already provide us with the right traces as you learn the different components, then it'll save us a lot of time. One last thing is the WC server trace. So a lot of what I focus on the next couple slides is WC server trace. Very useful, but very verbose, so don't turn on in production unless we really, really need you to. Slide 18, please. Okay, so let's look at the actual traces now. I'll show an example after, but first in general, it can get pretty complex and it will get into the specific components, but keeping in mind we want to be tracking the requests here, what sort of things can we do? So when I get a trace log, I'm hoping there's WC server trace on. The first thing I'm going to do, either with the trace or just a system out in general, I'll take a look for an exception, either an exception or an error message. If I have one and I see that it's related to what seems to be the problem, I'll start there. Once I have some kind of thread identified, I want to know more about the entire request and the scenario that led up to this particular request. So to do that, I can follow the J session cookie, for example. So that's created by WAS. It'll be common across all requests from a single browser. So that lets me build up the scenario in my head of what was this user clicking on before they got to this particular page. You can also track, if you wanted, based on the commerce cookies to see whether they're logged in and which users they are. But keep in mind that could be trickier, because if you have a scenario like you're a generic user, you add to cart so it makes you a guest, and then during checkout you log in as a registered user, well, you have three user IDs there, all from the same browser. So if you track it both on those cookies and on the single J session, it might help with identifying what's going on. One last thing you can do there is tracking based on the Java thread. So in a typical sense, when there's just one exception, that probably is where I'm going to start. I just want to see everything that happened with this one web request. So the thread ID would be common to a web request. And if a command is forwarding on to other commands within the same request, then the thread ID will be kept common. There could be cases when a single request does actually spawn multiple threads. Could get a little trickier then. Typically, out of the box code, we don't have anything that does that. But a lot of custom code, we do see it do that. So if you do have custom code, let us know. So let's go to slide 19, please. Okay, so here's the last slide that I'm going to go over. This is a specific example on what I just showed on the previous slide. I apologize if the font's a little tiny. Hopefully it's legible. The first and last things I highlight in the red boxes are the runtime servlet filter and the EC action servlet. I highlight those because the runtime servlet filter is where I said every request will get intercepted by first. So anything that hits the application server, if you see server trace on, you're going to see that request here. The action servlet at the bottom, it's only going to make it there if it's a non-cached request. So if it gets intercepted by the cache filter, you won't see it get to the action servlet necessarily. That's one thing to keep in mind. The query string there in the near the top, that's listing all of the parameters that came in with this web request. So these are all of the get parameters. So that itself is useful, but you might also see a crypto string as one of those parameters. The big long string that is all the encrypted parameters for the request, and you won't see any of the post parameters there. So for that, we want to move down to the bottom of this part, and that's the extract request parameters snippet of this log. So that's actually listing the entire hash map of all of the get properties, both encrypted and unencrypted format of them, as well as the post parameters. And the last point I want to make is the section right in the middle. That's listing of all the cookies. So the one I highlight is the J session cookie. I just want to highlight that because if you notice there's a :-1 at the end, that's the clone ID. So in my case, I didn't have a cluster, so I just have one default server identified by -1. But if you look back on one of the earlier slides where I show the snippet from the plugin XML, if you did have a cluster or multiple servers in a cluster, that last term would actually be the cluster or clone ID from the plugin XML. So if you're creating a problem locally in a clustered environment and you create an exception and you don't know which of your five servers to go to look for the logs or the exception, well, just take a look at your cookies as I showed you earlier, and you can right off the bat find your clone ID, look up in the plugin, and then you'll know which node you need to go to. So I'm going to pass it on to Dave now, who's going to take us through a few more examples.
Okay, so if you could please turn to slide 20. Thanks, Mike. So moving forward, we're going to continue with this line of questions you need to be asking. And one here is, what else do you have? You have the distinct benefit of being directly involved with your project, that you know all the pieces that integrate with it, more so than we do. So it's always good to keep these type of things in the back of your mind when you're looking through problems. So these could be issues like CPU spikes, out-of-memory errors, or just simple exceptions. Like I just said, it's always important to keep the bigger picture in mind. Note what else you're doing at the time the problem happened, what else has been done, or what else will be done when it comes to your project. And as Mike mentioned earlier, take note of the differences in your system between the out-of-box case. These integrations could be a source of concern or a source of the issue. We're not saying custom code or integrations are always a problem. We're just saying, you know, you have to keep it in the back of your mind when you're looking at things. These integrations, Mike mentioned a few of them earlier, scheduled jobs, messaging, caching, catalog searches, and things like SSL accelerators, terminators, load balancers. Please don't exclude any of these, as they may be very pertinent to the problem. Please turn to slide 21. So Mike went through all this talk about the different tiers in your system, or the different tiers in your stack. It's always useful to have a little bit of a visual example of how you can trace through. So what we have here on slide 21 is the first part of a two-part example of a request going from the storefront to the application server layer. So on the top, you see the order button highlighted, signifying it's going to be pressed. Mike mentioned Firefox's Firebug tool. So in the middle of the slide, you can see the request being sent out there. The next point where this request is going to go to is the web server. So you should be able to see in the web server's access log the get request for this particular action. In this case, it's stating an order item add. Turn to slide 22. Have here the completion of this example. So after the web server, we're going to hit the plugin. And please note that this trace at the top was generated with plugin trace enabled. It is verbose and it is heavy, so you don't really want to have it on at all times. And finally, from the plugin, it hits the application server layer. Mike's previous little example showed a request coming in with WC server trace, and you do need WC server trace to view this. Just in the middle of the bottom snippet, you see the request URI to order item add. Please turn to slide 23. Okay, since we're approaching what tends to be the high season or the peak season for most people or most industries, it's useful that we tailor the following questions alongside one of the common issues that arise during these peak season times, and that's performance. So when you're looking at performance problems, it's not enough to say you just have a performance issue. That's too much of a generalization of the actual problem. What you need to do is you need to dig deeper to find the source of where this performance problem actually is occurring. Is it in the storefront? Particularly, is it in a certain action in the storefront, like adding to a cart, doing a search? Or is it in the commerce tooling, like Accelerator and Management Center? Once again, where in the tooling is it happening? During what flow? Is it on a particular action? You also should be looking at the JVM. What's it doing during this performance issue? Is it sitting there doing nothing, or is it thrashing around throwing Java cores and heat dumps? It's important to note that you shouldn't be throwing out the silly possibilities right off the bat. Just put it in your checklist, cross them out immediately. It will save you time and potentially embarrassment later on if it turns out to be one of these problems. Let's turn to slide 24. So you may not have all the answers to the previous questions, but you should be able to get to a point where you've narrowed it down to a particular section and you feel comfortable moving forward with this. Now, you do have at your disposal a large set of diagnostics provided by our tooling to work through problems. These diagnostic resources are things like verbose garbage collection logs, heat dumps, Java cores, access logs, server logs, etc. If in answering the previous questions you're able to isolate it to a certain tier, then you will be able to focus only on a subset of these resources, which will actually speed up the time it takes you to look at this problem and figure it out. Slide 25, please. So when dealing with performance problems, as mentioned before, you have a lot at your disposal. Let's take a look at the verbose garbage collection file. You may be asking yourself, what good is this file? The answer is two-part. If you don't actually have verbose garbage collection login enabled, it's completely useless. If you do, it will provide you a wealth of information for particular types of problems. The type of problems I'm referring to are things like high CPU utilization, out-of-memory issues, or just general high heap utilization. As a side note, the verbose GC is logged to a file called the native standard error log, or the native standard outlog, depending on what JVM you're using. As mentioned before, actually I didn't, verbose garbage collection is not enabled by default. There is minimal overhead with enabling this, and it should be enabled, because you may only have one shot in production at catching the information, and if it's on by default, you're going to catch it right away, and you can start looking at the problem right away. Please turn to slide 26. Okay. How do you read this file? Well, it's a plain text file, so you're able to use a text editor to look at it if you really want to. Some people like doing that. Or there is IBM offering called PMAT, Pattern Modeling Analysis Tool for Java Garbage Collection, which allows you to visualize the information in a graphical manner. So what you're looking for when you're looking at verbose garbage collection logs is how frequent are the cycles, how large are the allocations, how much heap is free, things like that. Let's turn to slide 27. Here we have a simple view of what verbose GC or a verbose GC log looks like. It's just a little snippet of the text file on the left. It's obviously much larger and longer. And on the right, just a little snapshot of the graphing tooling available through PMAT. One of the benefits of using the graphical tooling is that you can view multiple criteria at the same time. So here we have garbage collection overhead alongside free heap and used heap. Turn to slide 28. Moving on to heap dumps. You've looked at the verbose garbage collection file. You kind of have an idea of what type of issue you're running into. And in the cases of out-of-memory issues or anything heap-related, you want to be looking at heap dumps, where a verbose garbage collection log file is the heap utilization over time. A heap dump is an actual snapshot of what is contained in the heap at the time this picture was taken. A few things to note about this file is that they can be very, very large. They are generated automatically by the JVM if it hits a problem and starts to panic usually, or you can configure the JVM to allow you to manually generate these yourselves. Heap dumps provide a wealth of information, and as mentioned, they are predominantly used for out-of-memory issues and high heap utilization, since they do allow you to see exactly what is in the heap when the picture was taken. You don't want to be looking at this file in the text editor. I don't think it's possible. IBM provides more tooling for viewing and diagnosing heap dumps. One of them is called the IBM Memory Analysis Tool, and the other one is the IBM Heap Analyzer. Slide 29. So what are you looking for in heap dumps? Using the tooling, you're able to look at the tooling actually offers you the ability to look for leak suspects. It may not be completely accurate at all times, since it is an automated tool, so take it with a grain of salt what it shows. Another methodology is to list the objects in memory according to the number of objects of this type there are. Be smart about this. Characters and strings are everywhere in Java, so they should be at the top of the list. Things like data beans, access beans, session beans should not be at the top of the list and should be looked at in more depth. As mentioned earlier, you should enable the ability to generate these manually because you can't do it out of the box by yourself. Okay, moving on to Java cores. These are usually taken with heap dumps, and it allows you to cross the divide between the raw data and what's actually what the application is actually running. You may ask yourself, what can one of these things tell you? And it's a lot. Since a Java core is a picture in time of what the application was running in terms of thread, you're able to see what the current active thread is, what is queued up to run. And most importantly, in my eyes, you're able to see the Java call stack of each thread. And it's very useful, especially when you're looking at issues like hangs, out of memories, slowdowns, and general performance issues. Usually, with Java cores, you want to be looking at a group of them taking over a defined period of time, like say three, taken every 2 minutes or every 3 minutes, as it will give you an idea of how process is moving through its activities. These files can be looked at in a plain text editor. Sometimes it's good to do so, sometimes it's not. For those times when it's not, we provide the tool IBM Thread and Monitor Dump Analyzer for Java. Once again, it just allows you to visualize the Java core. Please move to slide 31. Okay, so what are you looking for in Java cores? It's a specific set of information. You're looking to see what was actually running at the time the Java core was taken. Don't be too locked into the current running thread, though, because this could be just some process that runs for 1 millisecond and the thread is taken at that time. Look at what's also queued up or waiting to run. Container threads and scheduler threads are important to look at, too, since this is where the bulk of the commerce functions run from. In the Java stack, just a quick note, you're able to see JSPs that are running just via their compiled class in the stack, so this is useful. Use it. So please move to slide 32. Just as a quick overview, let's put it all together a little bit, what you need to do. Your site went down, what do you do now? Restart. If it's a hang situation or something like that, ensure you get the Java cores first. Collect all the data that you actually need or you think you need. Make sure you don't delete it. You're going to need it. And remember what happened, not the fact that your site just went down, but what was happening right before that, or what you did just before that. Did you load 1,000 promotions? This is very good information to keep in the back of your mind as they'll allow you to target your problem determination. Familiarize yourself with the must gathers, in case it happens again, so you know what you need to have on or what you need to collect. And it will also allow you to collect information you may already have from this first occurrence of the problem. Then you can join us next week for more pointers in our follow-up presentation. And as always, we're here to help you, so please do open up a PMR if you need to. We are more than happy to move through with your issue and assist you with it. Please turn to slide 33. Okay, so as you can see over here, it's just a quick summary of what we were talking about. Read it over, keep it in the back of your mind, and you'll be better off doing this. Please turn to slide 34. Here are some additional resources, the ones that were mentioned during this presentation. Have a look over them. They're a good read. They're very informative. Return to slide 35. This chart includes links to a number of sites that provide valuable online resources for WebSphere products. DeveloperWorks offers in-depth technical information. The events link on support pages points you to webcasts and conference information. Visit WebSphere.org for user group information and more product information. The IBM Education Assistant consists of self-help modules to get new users up the learning curve quickly. The SR tool is for Passport Advantage clients to open, update, and view PMRs online. And the My Notifications link on all product pages lets you sign up for weekly email updates for products of interest to you. This concludes our presentation. We'd like to thank you for joining us, and now I will turn the presentation over to Joseph.
Thank you, Michael and David, for a great presentation. At this point, Crystal, we would like to open the lines for questions.
Our first question comes from Raju Nalapa.
Thank you very much for the presentation. Sometimes we encounter that trying to pinpoint an error or trying to find out the root cause is sometimes picking up a needle in a haystack, right? So what do you have? Do you have any specific tooling so that it's quick for us to identify these kinds of any type of an issue? Because you do have the different tools, right? Do you have some kind of a class or training for us to, for someone who's new, to basically go through?
So the tooling? In terms of pulling stuff from the system out logs themselves and kind of correlating them over time, That's more of a manual process even for support. That's what they're training us for, and that's what we want to help train you on. As far as tools that are kind of putting things together and finding things that do seem like a problem and kind of applying them a step further, There is some tooling for that. A lot of it you can get from IBM Support Assistant, which is actually going to be one of the main focuses of next week. So if you have the time to join next week, then you can see the tooling side of things. But in terms of kind of the needle in a haystack, if it's an intermittent type of problem, for us to solve that kind of problem, even it's kind of a matter of, well, we need it to happen a couple of times and hope we have the data. We're pretty good at making theories as to why things happen, but usually to actually confirm it, we're going to have to get the right data for a specific occurrence of it. And usually, as I said, you're going to need to go back to actually work with the development team, or if you are one of the developers, to actually consider the code itself that's in the flow. But that's why we want you to turn on tracing and enable tracing in your own custom code too, just so you can really get an idea of which code is being invoked. There's no silver bullet on a tool that will kind of pull out from the system outlog and say this is your problem, but those are sort of the methodologies that we're trying to train you on.
Okay, good.
Great question. I think there's a question in the chat, actually. I can address that. So the question in the chat is, what's an easy way to identify if the issue is on a specific app server? So Citi is referring to slide 9 of our presentation. So one of the things, it's a good question actually, one of the things I mentioned was a technique on if you can reproduce the problem in your local browser, but you don't know where it's going, you can look at your JSession cookie and then check which app server that's going to. But that's kind of hoping that you're finding which application server is the problem. Another thing you can do is you can actually map a local web server to each individual app server in your cluster. So what that could let you do is then you can sort of hit each one directly, and then you can see if you are able to reproduce the problem on one specific app server. So that's a similar technique to what I described on bypassing the web servers altogether and making a WAS virtual host for the HTTP transport, and that lets you hit the app server directly with the web server out of the picture. So there's a few different options on how to try to pinpoint it down, I guess. Hopefully your cluster isn't too huge. If you do have like 20 servers in your cluster, you probably just want to go until you hit the problem and then check your cookie to see which server you got it on. Good question though, Citi.
At this time, there are no further questions.
Thank you, Mike, and thank you, David. At this time, we will conclude the presentation.